This is episode 215 of On the Tropes. I'm your host, Sir, and today I'm joined by
Eva
and Hector.
Hector? Our cat. He's still not talking.
He's not saying anything, is he?
No.
Well, I wonder if today's episode will get him excited.
Yeah.
Because I know he's a big fan of the random trope up. And as listeners just heard, we rolled the random trope. And it's funny because they're hearing that. This is right after we watched Tiger King, so it's a little much like that documentary, out of order. In any case, listeners, our trope is scarred equipment. And we'll get into that in a moment. However, we figured we'd start with some emails because we haven't heard from our listeners in a while. We want to check in on folks. So our first email is from JDMF, also known as John Decker Motherfucker, who is hopefully nestled safely. Is he living in the U.S. now?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he used to be John from the U.K., and now he's kind of John, formerly of the U.K. So I'll go ahead and start. He says, three rounds in, and you guys are doing pretty good.
He's talking about the game we were playing.
Yeah, so how many episodes ago was this?
Approximately 84. It was years ago. Time has no meaning for me anymore.
Yeah, it does feel like... it feels like it was a while ago, and really it was like, what, like just 4 weeks ago?
I'm really not trying to minimize, because there's a lot of people who are working a lot of overtime right now, and it's very hard on them. I am having a less difficult, but nevertheless completely disorienting experience, having been out of work for 2 weeks and looking at one to two more.
Yeah, yeah. So we played this game, it was...
X meets Y, I think you called it. And
listeners... It's back a few episodes. I don't know which one.
There's no way of knowing.
So anyhow, he goes, three rounds in and you guys are doing pretty good. Obviously, I wasn't clear about how the rounds were supposed to work. It was supposed to be increasing difficulty, i.e. piece meets cake equal easy piece of cake. Rubber meets road equals trickier, where the rubber meets the road. Rock meets hard place equals hardest, between a rock and a hard place, and die hard on an X equal die hardest. I'm still not sure if Sir was genuinely confused thinking that last round was going to be more of the rock-based puns, or if he was putting on some obfuscating stupidity. It makes me laugh either way.
It was definitely the first one, because I was also anticipating Dwayne Johnson puns.
I absolutely was anticipating Dwayne Johnson puns, as I always am.
Right. You stay ready for
stay
Dwayne.
Ready.
For Dwayne Johnson.
Not a jabroni. Oh, he goes on to say, and since you were wondering, I didn't come up with all of these. I pulled from the TV Tropes page. They are ones that, A, I agreed with. Not all the examples on the page made sense to me, or they're a real stretch. And B, I thought you stood a chance of guessing. And he says, keep up the good work. JDMF.
Take care, John.
Take care, John, and stay safe, stay inside. This is a really good opportunity to write...
We're going to get so many games. I don't know what job he has. Maybe he has a job where he's working too much. In which case, I just hope he gets rest.
Catchphrase, John, if you're listening, we need that Tiger King game, man. So you gotta watch it and see if you can stump us with something. We did get some more feedback from our oldest supporter, you know, Paul Mampley. He's been there from...
That's Paul in the UK.
Paul in the UK. He's been there from the very beginning. Top 5 documentaries he sent us, as well as top 5 non-powered custom heroes and top 5 cosmic horror story. I'm going to start with top 5 documentaries. He says 13th, The Act of Killing, Tyson, being the Mike Tyson documentary, Bowling for Columbine, Super Size Me. You got any responses, Eva?
Nothing's really sticking out, you know. I think those are solid.
I think they're very solid. Honestly, they're...
I'm kind of surprised nobody mentioned 13th when we talked about it.
It's a great one, you know. I think I mentioned Who Streets or kind of a couple of...
Yeah.
Similar documentaries that year and the Baldwin one, yeah. That's a really...
Especially for the length.
Yeah.
You know, so many things, especially Netflix series, are way longer. You know, that could have been a 5-hour documentary.
Easily.
And it's, what, less than 2? Might be closer to 1?
Yeah. Great subject. Really well explained. He goes on to give us his list for Not Power Custom Hero, The Lone Ranger, The Phantom, and he says he's the bomb, Mystery Men in general, The Tick and his crew, and Watchmen in general. Definitely, I mean, it was nice that somebody gave a shout out to The Lone Ranger. And of course, I should point out that there's this connection here because Bass Reeves, the legendary black lawman out west in the old west, has a...
It's the Lone Ranger, folks.
He's the Lone Ranger. He's basically the real Lone Ranger is what the character is based on. And then he shows up in Watchmen, so that's a nice loop there. And then his list for Cosmic Horror Story, Final Destination, John Carpenter's The Thing, Rick and Morty, Samurai Jack, and Godzilla.
Man, Final Destination.
Wow.
Do they ever really explain what the horrible force it is that's causing those things? It's just that one of them cheats death, and it just goes from there.
Yeah. Interesting fact. I've never seen any of those films.
Oh, I've seen at least the first 2. I don't think I've seen the 3rd one. They're pretty funny.
Yeah, aren't they good?
Yeah, like, I'm not a person who likes a lot of funny in my horror. Mm-hmm. It's not really my thing. I didn't see them until I was in college. It was several years after they came out. I had a friend who really liked them. And a couple of them are some pretty good laughs.
Yeah, nice.
It's like that game Mousetrap. Remember the game Mousetrap? Mm-hmm. Where all of these ridiculous things have to happen in sequence to... It's like that, over and over again.
Yeah, this is a good list. Rick and Morty, some of the best cosmic horror around right now, I think, because of just how it takes these really hard sci-fi tropes and follows them to their most logical conclusion. And Samurai Jack's a little mentioned cosmic horror story, considering Aku is this shape-shifting, time-traveling demon from the future. And so, yeah, Paul, always, you know, great to hear from you. Thanks for the, you know, subject to some top fives for your isolated souls. Hopefully.
Hopefully him and his family are doing well.
Definitely, yeah. And good, you know, congratulations on his beautiful child. He's got these cool, like, you put stuff on his social media, pictures of his kid and stuff. They're pretty fucking great. And hopefully this episode is a salve to your isolated soul.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Malcolm X.
Malcolm X. So there's, in the studio, we have our velvet painting of Malcolm X, and it's Malcolm with a beard, the good Malcolm.
Is there a beard under there? I just see mostly a mustache.
A beard there.
Yeah, I see a little speckle.
No, this is post NOI, so you can actually grow facial hair. Let me leave it at that. I don't want to get any death threats. So, let's see. What have you been watching after Tiger King?
Nothing. There is only Tiger King.
Nothing's really... we're watching Better Call Saul.
Yeah, we watch Better Call Saul.
You kind of...
Is it time to watch Better Call Saul again? What day is this?
They're blended together. They're blended together. Well, we figured we'd get back to our roots. And we'd actually cover a trope.
I guess. I mean...
So we went ahead and clicked the old random trope button, and we came up with scarred equipment. As is tradition, I'm going to read the description from TVTropes.org, our amazing benefactors and hosts. So badass characters get thrown to the ringer all the time. To show the ordeals that they have been through, the equipment they use is just as scarred as they themselves are. This tends to be a way to contrast the newbie... /fresh meat, who has the unused equipment with the veteran whose armor are proof of experience. More realistic works have their cool car with scrapes and dings. Fantastic works have their body armor and weapons scratched and pitted from battle. They'll be surprised if someone looking at that equipment has a "what a piece of junk" reaction. Compare rugged scar, good scar, evil scars, dented iron, and every scar has a story for scars on one's person. See used future and wrecked weapon for other equipment maladies. So, Eva.
Got any scars?
Nice reversal there. Do I have any good scars? I have a bite mark scar from essentially, I guess it was not, I don't know if it's so much a bite as much as, you know, I got bitten. I'm just going to leave it at that. Been at a house party over 10 years ago.
What, the movie screening or?
No, it wasn't a movie screening. Screening a house party, however. Yeah, I was bitten in a melee. And I think that's, I've got a scar from a marijuana edible cutting accident.
Okay.
That probably, I was told by a nurse the next day, required stitches. Yeah, I hadn't gotten them, so there's like, whatever.
The horse is already out of the barn.
And then when I was doing that whole pirate radio, not pirate radio, totally legal radio station that I had that everybody thought was pirated.
It was just staffed by pirates.
We were pirates. Radio Free Akron, moving some heavy pipes we were using for our antenna.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah, I have a really bad scar on my leg from scraping off like probably 3 inches of, not deep, 3 inches across of skin. And that's probably about it for scars. What about you?
I have a scar on my big toe from when I was like 2 or 3 years old. I was at my aunt's house and she was letting me play in the kitchen cupboards like you used to let kids do. And I was taking the cans out of the cupboard and putting them on the floor and then putting them back in the cupboard. And I dropped a can, like a soup can or something, on my foot, and I cut myself. Not that badly. I didn't get stitches or anything. I just still have a scar, like, across the bottom of my, like, the nail bed of my toe, of my big toe. It's like a U shape that if I mention it in front of my aunt, she still gets upset. And, like, I know you didn't do it on purpose or anything like that. But other than that, not really. I've never had stitches. I've never broken a bone.
Yeah, never broken anything, knock on wood.
Yeah, nothing other than that exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, like, one of my, not claims to fame, it's one of the things I'm most happy about, that I've never actually broken a bone.
Mm-hmm.
Despite all the shenanigans I've gotten into. Well, so this trope, one of the things it mentions at the end, that's, like, one of my favorite elements, is the used future.
Yeah.
I always think about Star Wars, you know, when the Phantom Menace came out, the new trilogy, everybody kind of pushed back against, oh, well, all the spaceships in it and the space stations and equipment, it's all new and, like, looking. And Lucas had, and I don't know if he planned it, you know, you couldn't plan this kind of thing however many years, you know, it was in between, was it 20 years? Yeah, he had the best explanation for it and really think on his feet. He's like, well, when we see the Empire by the time episode 3 comes around, or episode 4 comes around, New Hope.
Star Wars, as I call it.
It's a declining
society.
It's a declining society, much like the Cold War, post-war generation, you kind of saw all of this, like, old equipment and, like, some of the communist Soviet states.
Yeah.
Like, things that were just well
left over,
worn, left over from past periods.
Things that have been, you know, refitted, reassigned.
Yeah, and it instantly gave this great kind of character.
Just makes it authentic.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes it look like something that actually exists in the world rather than something that was constructed for the movie. It makes it feel like this is a real place in a real time that has a past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story of this place didn't start when the movie started.
Exactly.
It makes us think about where else this character's been or where else this object has been.
Mm-hmm. And it was a way for him to explain away his complete farce of a prequel series. I mean, God, they're bad.
Yeah, I wonder if you were a littler kid than anybody younger than us. Like, if you were less than 15 years old.
Are you thinking of Nightlight?
I could be. I don't think he's alone, though.
Host.
I don't.
Anthony, yeah. Is it, yeah. You know, a younger film critic in the area, and kind of, I hazard to call him an industry guy. I'm sure he'd really appreciate that. like we have an industry anymore. Right. Film industry's dead. Glad I got out. Yeah, he loves that movie, and it's. I actually watched episode was three when I kind of rewatched the series. I followed this guy's. I'll see if I can find it before the end of the episode. Some guy on. So Vulture put up like a
definitive, like what order to yeah. which Star Wars out of all the Star Wars films. So here's what order you watch them in, and here's which ones you don't bother with.
Yeah, and the only prequel trilogy that he even pays attention to is episode three. Yeah, it's actually not bad in some ways. Like it helps to see Revenge of the Sith in the midst of watching the original trilogy because you get this. I think he put it, like, right before... No, he puts it right after Empire Strikes Back. So you've just seen kind of the failure of the dark side to entice Luke, and then you get to see what happened to his father, like, right afterwards. It really gives it some context.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that there's a place for those movies, and even though they're... Man, those first two were just so bad. Jar Jar is so awful. And
fun story about those. Mm-hmm. I've only ever seen The Phantom Menace in German, and I've seen it twice. We watched it in German class 2 years in a row because we had. I think they were different teachers, but they both were like, "We're going to watch a contemporary film that's dubbed in German, so you guys can practice your German comprehension." I had never seen The Phantom Menace in English. I could mostly figure out what was happening in German, but Jar Jar in German was something else. I don't think it had the same. I don't think the dub of it was as problematic as the character is. In English,
how that movie's racist.
He had a different kind of it was an obnoxious voice, but not the same one he has in English.
And the other layer of that film's other major layer of its racism is really relevant now, because the other major issue with it is the Trade Federation.
Mm-hmm.
Their accents are all like awful Yellow Peril Asian accents.
Yeah, I don't remember. Like we were watching it in class. I was not paying attention to it. It was like 10% paying attention to it.
I wonder if even that, though, is probably different in the German.
It could be. It could not be. I mean, I guess depending on how faithful they wanted to be to the original.
Man. And speaking of George Lucas, listeners, there's a, it's on YouTube. And is it The Cribs? It's Master P and George Lucas visiting Skywalker Ranch in, 2003.
Yeah.
And Master P at first calls him John Lucas.
Repeatedly. Not just at first.
And you think it's his accent. When he finally starts to round, he says George, he does say it a certain way. However, the first couple times he's saying John, he has no idea who George Lucas is. And man, what a contentious, kind of awkward interview. Yeah.
What kind of weird, one from column A, one from column B,
exactly.
Kind of brainstorming session, put those two dudes together.
I can't call it. Master P is a good role model, though.
Yeah.
Well, I guess let's get into Scarred Equipment.
Yeah.
I think the thing I love about this trope is essentially what you said, and that's that it can be used to give so much character, and it tells some history. It gives you a little bit of world building, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really draws you into what the environment is. It allows the character to tell some stories about their environment. They can say, "Oh, well, this was damaged here." Or,
right.
It kind of gives just some added weight and meat to what's usually a fantastic situation.
Yeah.
Would you say that you have any Scarred Equipment?
Me personally, I guess probably nothing's really coming to mind at the moment. It doesn't feel fair to use the hot rod.
Well,
yeah.
You do
that.
Own a hot rod, though.
I do own a hot rod. It's old. It's kind of scary looking.
What kind of car is it?
It's a 1929 Ford Model A coupe.
And this isn't your regular vehicle.
It's not my daily driver. No, we don't live someplace where you can really drive it all year because it doesn't have a roof. And it's pretty cold in the wintertime and it gets hot in the summertime pretty quickly. But it's got the original paint on it, and which seems to have been painted with a brush. Usually there's like a especially when this is a vehicle that we're talking about in a film or a weapon, somebody always goes like, oh, what a piece of junk. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure it would be very easy to, you know, if you saw my car parked somewhere, that might be somebody's first reaction to it, especially if they aren't a person who's conditioned to appreciate such a vehicle.
I think it's a nice vehicle.
Yeah. I really missed it today. Today was a really nice day. It was really sunny, which made it feel warmer than it really was, and it would have been a nice day to take it out, and I was bummed that I can't.
Yeah, that'll be our first post-quarantine drive.
Yeah. Maybe, though, you know, we'll probably have to find a nice stretch of road with no potholes, but because the suspension on that is questionable. It's not a comfort, it's not a relaxing ride. This is not like a ride in like a nice, like a Cadillac where you can really feel like you're like cruising somewhere. No, it's bumpy. It's loud. It's not comfortable. It's its own experience.
Nice.
But it's got no cameras. It's got no little satellite correspondence.
Right. It's not tracking.
I can't be tracked in it unless I take the phone with me.
Yeah. It's a good Mad Max prep car.
It really is.
We've been talking a lot about Mad Max recently, of course.
Yeah. You know. Although, like, the way that I lowered it on the frame, it would not be suitable for the kind of pursuit that you see some of the older Fords and Chevys at the beginning of Fury Road doing. My car is not cut out for that.
I'm sure we can, you know, run somebody off the road.
Yeah, it's just not going to hold up the way that those would. We're not really planning on going off-road in that, I don't think. We're going to need a truck. Do you want to get into this?
Let's get it.
You want to go first this time?
Yeah.
What's your number 5 piece of SCART equipment?
My number 5. I'm going to go with Hellboy. Both Hellboy, his person, he accumulates a lot of battle damage, essentially, is what you'd call it. And he also has a gun called the Good Samaritan, which is my main pick for him. And it's just this, like, really beat up. It's this huge gun. And the Hellboy, obviously, is like a large, is a big monster. It's a gun that shoots a 22-millimeter shell, essentially. Like, not like a bullet. It's like a small artillery shell, almost. And it's just this really old, rusty-looking gun. And Hellboy, I think it's in his first appearance, he talks about how he's not a good shot. And he goes to shoot a monster at the Samaritan, and it basically like blows up. It's just such a piece of junk. I really can't think of many times where he actually uses it effectively. It either gets knocked out of his hand, it malfunctions, or what. Yet he still carries it around. And apparently, it's given to him by an older pulp hero named the Torch of Liberty.
Hmm.
Yeah, Hellboy's like, I mean, it's probably my favorite comic book series. I think in the movie it's a lot more effective, which kind of sucks. I liked it I like it being this goofy gun that he tries to use and he just has to resort to his fist.
Action
fist to cuffs. Eva, what's your number 5?
Let me think. My number 5, I'm gonna go with the state of my hair and eyebrows these days. Like, things are kind of rough right now. I'm about 3 weeks overdue for touching up my hair. I've got way more gray hair than I remember having. And it's just, I need to trim my bangs. I'm trying to wait until I'm in a better mood to tackle that. And who knows what's going to happen.
I hear you. I've got the Lorenzo Lamas gone.
Yeah, but you were already heading into, like, David Letterman territory for a little bit there.
kind of wore a Sasquatch look, and then I actually trimmed down to the Lorenzo Lamas because I wanted to make it even with my shitty mustache that I have growing.
Same.
Yeah, it's, It's one of those things. It's funny. We listen to a lot of Teddy Atlas. It's called The Fight with
Teddy. The Fight with Teddy Atlas.
Listeners, we're going to be making up a lot of different podcasts. Check out Michelle Mission. Check out Isaac Arthur on YouTube. Check out Teddy Atlas. And Teddy Atlas.
He was ragging on his co-host a little bit.
Yeah, he's like, you know, yeah, here and there on a teepee, is there also like a razor shortage?
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a lot of Zoom meetings and everybody's growing this kind of quarantine beard. And
you know, it's an opportunity for those of us who are not being called in to work more, because there are some people who are working a lot more than normal. But those of us who are staying home, we're all learning, like, what's essential to us? Right. Like, is eyebrow pencil essential? Is beard length something that are you where you want to be? Who are we doing this for? Are we doing it for ourselves, or are we doing it for other people?
Exactly. A lot of reevaluating happening.
Hector looks exactly the same. He's still grooming himself as regularly as he always was, which could be an important lesson for the rest of us.
Much like Teddy Atlas.
Right. Teddy Atlas was completely clean-shaven.
I will say, though, that I am going for a specific look. You know, I shaved the neck beard, mirrored that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's definitely the...
You're serious about Lorenzo Lamas.
Hey, I think it's a good look.
Are you watching Renegade during the day on Heroes and Icons?
It's my number four.
You mean number five?
Why went first?
I went first. I said number five was my hair.
I had already done Hellboy.
Oh, that's right. You went first.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I had mine. So yours is number four. You're right.
So my number four, I think I'm going to go with Boba Fett.
Okay.
And what's really cool about Boba Fett is the character, the first time he shows up, I believe, is in the Star Wars... He debuted in the now non-canonical Star Wars Holiday Special 1978, which is not on Disney Plus, which is a crime. However, you can find it on YouTube, I believe. And he's just this, like, really well-designed, awesome bounty hunter character. Everybody knows about him from Star Wars. They retconned him into a bounty hunter named Jango Fett, who's then cloned in the Clone Wars. All that stuff's terrible. When we had no idea who the guy was, and he had no background for how many years, all he had was those weird Star Wars books, like Shadow of the Empire and stuff like that, and all this kind of like third rate, sometimes first rate, as in the case of that novel, extra content before the new trilogy came out. Like, Boba Fett was just a mystery. And it was so cool. He's just this guy with this scarred arm. You never see his face.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of George Lucas's rules, was that if you wanted to tell a story about Boba Fett, you couldn't come up with an origin for it. He had to remain a mystery. You weren't supposed to see what his face looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we live in this kind of fan culture now that everybody wants to have this, like, extensive information. Everything has to be explained. Every character has to be way overdone.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you want a mystery man. You want a guy that, you know, or a character, a person that you have no idea who they are, and yet they're compelling because of that, because of the mystery. And you just have this battle-scarred armor. That was pretty much his character.
Mm-hmm.
Ethan, what's your number four?
My number four... I'm going to say Predator, because of what we talked about how it establishes that these characters have a past, that it proves that it happened, although it does not necessarily explain to us what that was. The Predators have, you know, worn armor, you know, it's scratched, it's damaged occasionally. I'm thinking of at the end of Predator 2 when we see it's like trophy hall.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, there's an old gun in that too. He has like a flintlock pistol or something like that.
Yeah, we learn that, you know, if somebody's got a scar, they've been somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen something.
Predator 1 or 2?
You mean my personal choice? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard for me to say 2, because without 1 you wouldn't get 2.
Yeah, I mean, it's a personal answer.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say, you know, that it's hard for me to say 2, because you need 1. to exist. I can't get rid of one completely. However, like if both, like if we turned on the TV right now and Predator were on, I might not want to watch it. If Predator 2 were on, I do want to watch it.
Do you think you've seen Predator 1 more?
Yeah, probably.
I think I've probably seen Predator 2 more because I saw it on like HBO and Cinemax.
Back when they used to show some random sequel all the time.
They never saw the original. Predator 1 has a lot of good, like, behind the scenes. I feel like the behind the scenes info about Predator 1 is better than
anything.
Billy, Native American actor, them needing extra insurance. Mm-hmm. For him and everybody else on set because he was there because he was just known for being such a hellraiser. And you got Jesse Ventura is in it. Yeah, the list goes on.
One of my personal favorites, at least until like the last 10 years. He's gone some kind of off the rails.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, childhood favorites. Follow up question about Predator, specifically Predator 2. Remember when all of the movies in the future took place in 1997?
Mm. Yeah. And this was also, I mean, Predator 2 is my personal favorite. And this is when we had Danny Glover that they were trying to really push him as this action hero.
One of Gary Busey's last straight roles.
Yeah, as straight man as Gary Busey could be. You know?
Well, he's not playing Gary Busey, at least.
Yeah. This is when he was still kind of, because didn't we watch an interview? We watched an interview of him on the Predator set. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about climate change and how we need to change like how we live to like try to avoid it. It's really like almost lucid and compelling.
Yeah. Hmm. It feels like, you know, at least at the time, like 1997 was far enough in the future to be the future, but not so far in the future that any of the technology or the cars or anything would need to be different. Like,
it also has that trope from the 90s of, because the Jamaican shower posses were just running around showering people with bullets as they're known for, and taking over the drug trade in the South. So there were a lot of movies that had Jamaican gangsters in it. Mm-hmm. They were just so overdone, and this has one of the best ones.
Oh, like, totally.
Might actually be just flat out the best one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Predator 2 is pretty good. So is it by my number three is The Mandalorian, to follow up on Boba Fett. And so I guess this would be an inverse of the Trump version, because when we meet The Mandalorian, and this is Disney Plus, the new series, he has the similar Beskar armor, and Beskar is like, they're kind of adamantium of Star Wars. It's this like super hard metal that the Mandalorians use. And he has similar armor to Boba Fett. It's beat up. And then you find out that there is a forger that's like this ritual, you know, Mandalorian religious kind of figure that forges Mandalorian armor, and she makes him, as he's taking on jobs and like getting the Beskar metal, she takes it and smelts it down and makes some weapons and a new chest plate and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I guess, spoiler alert. And listeners, you're going to have to just hope that you had a spoiler alert. I don't have all the fancy special effects tools.
We didn't prepare accordingly before we had to shelter in place.
Yeah.
We didn't get the spoiler button.
Yeah, we didn't bring all the buttons. Yet, by the end of the season, he's got this brand new, like, shiny looking Mandalorian armor and, so it's kind of the inverse of that. Yeah, I like that the inverse isn't... It's not that he's the new guy who just has the shiny armor. He has to earn it,
mm-hmm.
which is really impressive. It almost makes him feel like a knight, you know?
Yeah.
Like he has to...
It has a ceremonial component.
Yeah, and knights used to actually... That's how they improve their armor. They usually would either fight in a tournament, and you could sometimes win things that way, or they would fight on the battlefield, and they would actually, so you're a man in arms, you could kill a guy who was higher ranking than you and take him, or if you took him for ransom, mm-hmm. you sell him back to his family, you get to keep his weapons, his horse if it's still alive, you get to keep his digs, basically. So kind of a nice come up. Eva, what is your number two?
Is it two or three?
It's three.
Who knows? It doesn't matter. What day is this? What number is this? Nothing is in any order anymore. Nothing matters.
Chaos reigns.
No one cares. We're all going to live like cats. It doesn't matter what time it is. We're going to sleep most of the day, eat whatever we feel like it. So my next one is Rocky. Hmm. And Rocky as a character goes through this as the stories go on. But I'm thinking specifically of Rocky's apartment in the first film. One of the things that I really go for when I look at old films, you know, I'm a fan of old films. I like watching them for, like, the way the sets are constructed. Like, what furniture do they use? What cars do they drive? What clothes do people wear? And one of the things that I love, because it's a thing in older industrial design that I love, is a thing called a monitor top refrigerator. It's a little, like, ice box, and it's got the cooling element on it. There's this thing, kind of looks like a beehive kind of thing on top of it. So anytime there's a movie with a monitor top fridge, like, I'm on it. And Rocky has a monitor top fridge, and to have one in the 70s means he's got, it's probably a 50-year-old refrigerator in this little apartment. And there's the scene where he starts, like, yelling about how much he hates where he lives and he hates his life and this whole thing stinks. And they really, without making it, like, it's the movie doesn't really, like, except for that scene, doesn't really harp on what kind of a place he lives in. They've told us what kind of person he is.
Yeah, he's a leg breaker.
He
works for the mob. That's something that people really... They forget a couple of things about Rocky. For one, they forget that Sylvester Stallone wrote this film. And that is brilliant.
It really is. He's a well-developed character.
Yeah, it's an excellent film. Rocky is totally unlike any film in the immediate Rocky series. It's much more like Creed than any of the other ones. It's a completely genuine, absolutely a classic. And people forget that Rocky is a criminal. Not only a criminal, he's a violent criminal. He hurts people for money. He's a loan shark.
And not even that much money for himself.
He's the guy that goes and collects.
He goes and collects, and he turns all... He's not taking any of that for himself. You know, he's living a very, very, very poor life.
Yeah. You know, we had a conversation about boxers who were also active...
Criminals.
Criminal figures. Lump of proletariat, if you will. And
working class.
Working class. There's Sonny Liston.
The Mayweathers,
especially during the 80s, you know, Roger and then Floyd.
Floyd Sr. Junior's a different kind of criminal.
Who's the one we just... Galata.
Andrew Galata, yeah.
Galata, straight up Polish gangster. It's interesting because I don't want anybody to take this as necessarily a shout out to Vlad TV, yet there is a good Zab Judah interview that Vlad put out, and Zab Judah, interestingly enough, I never really got the feeling he was really a criminal.
No.
He's from Brownsville, Brooklyn. If you're from Brownsville,
he seems to be affiliated, kind of like probably.
Your neighborhood guy, as we call it. Your knockaround guy.
Yeah.
We used to call it.
What's your next one?
Movie on number two.
Yeah. Probably.
So, my number two is a great... it was a great tradition. I used to... When I was a kid, I loved action figures. And one of the coolest things that companies used to do was they would release an action figure, like a Wolverine or you know, Terminator, and then they would also release a couple of variants, and they would be the battle-damaged version. And it would be an action figure that had, like the Terminator 2 battle damage, blow-open chest action
figure. Oh, yes.
You can take the front of his chest off, and he's got, like, the metal exoskeleton.
Yeah.
The Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which is a terrible film. I guess this is a new one. They have kind of a throwback where it's the battle damage Velociraptor. If you can see, like, this exposed flesh and... whatnot. And it was just such a cool, like, immersive gameplay element, you know. As kids, I remember, it's a really nerdy fact, I used to be into custom figures. Like, my mom's a painter and artist, and she used to make a lot of money that way. And so she had all this extra paint, and a lot because there weren't like that there weren't black action figures or, you know, the characters that I wanted to see from, you know, Bishop or whoever. They didn't always have figures for them, so I would sit in the basement, no ventilation, varnish, paint, and, you know, little molds and mess around plastic and things like that, and create these little custom action figures. And sometimes I would, we'd add. And then, you know, my friends thought I was, like, out of my mind. They thought it was kind of cool. We'd have, like, little battle damage things. It's just fun. It adds a lot of, you know, it's immersive. People talk a lot about immersive gameplay in video games now,
You used to actually do it by touching things.
Right.
Wild
things
story.
Used to actually be physical, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Who knew?
What's your number two?
My number two, not that different from what you were talking about, you know, and as technology changes, as the way that we conduct ourselves for, you know, war and games. My number two is Down Periscope.
Wow. Man, no, I just saw this movie about 2 years ago.
It was 3 years ago. Getting on 3 years ago. It was one of my favorite. I saw it in the theater when it came out. There was a Regal Cinemas that was like the $2 theater across the street from where I lived. And so my friend and I would go over there often. And it was one of those movies we probably went over at like 9:30 at night. You know, we were the only ones there. And then we would just watch it on TV. It's one of my dad's favorite comedies. It's pretty great. It's about a war game where we have a diesel submarine against a nuclear submarine. One of the characters comments about the diesel sub that it looks like the only thing holding it together are the bird droppings. We got Harry Dean Stanton as the engine operator.
Harry Dean Stanton. Man, what couldn't he do?
Yeah.
Talk about scarred equipment.
Right? He's wearing an old Hawaiian shirt. Get the feeling that he might have been on the ship the whole time.
Did you see Lucky?
No.
It's not bad. It was nice to see it in theaters. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, I don't know if it's worth a watch.
Yeah. Yet
something about seeing it in theaters, considering the career that he had,
mm-hmm.
it was actually kind of cool. And it's probably one of my last theater experiences. God knows they're not coming back. All right, so what are we on?
It's your number one.
Wow. So my number one is the Pursuit Special.
Ah, yes.
Of the Main Force Patrolman, Max Ratansky, also known as Mad Max.
Was that your cool car?
It might have been one of my cool cars. And it's also known as the last of the V8 Interceptors.
Mm-hmm.
It appears in Mad Max, Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior. Doesn't appear in Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah.
And then it shows up again in Mad Max Fury Road. And it's basically a, I guess it's a 1972 Holden Monaro. Mm-hmm. What is that?
I don't know.
Ask my resident car expert.
Yeah. I thought that, weren't we just talking the other day about what the proper timeline is for the Mad Max films? And we were trying to figure out if Thunderdome is before or after Fury Road.
Yeah, and you know what? I actually just screwed up. That's the first Pursuit Special shown in the movie. However, Max
it's a Ford.
Is a Ford Falcon XB GT.
Yeah, I was very confused by that. I was going to get to that in a second because I really thought it was a Ford.
But yeah, we were just wondering that the other day. Like, what the
how they fit together.
I think, I mean, it seems that it's in order. Yeah.
But since the car appears in the room.
Yeah, and it's like, what happened to it in Thunderdome, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, though, I like how it's like a horse. I mean, the car has so much character.
Yeah.
I love the idea of him just trying to keep it going and to keep driving this thing, even though clearly there's probably other vehicles. Yeah, I guess the whole point of the series is people trying to hold on to whatever is still useful, whatever still works,
mm-hmm.
whatever still works well. I think that really almost the entire series, Mad Max, is about scarred equipment, scarred people,
mm-hmm.
scarred landscape, and what survives after the collapse of civilization. I'll say two, because I'll point out this movie anytime I can. we watched the greatest, it's the best Australian film history documentary. It's actually directed by George Miller. It's called 40,000 Years of Dreaming. It's these white fellas dreaming, a century of Australian cinema. And it's an hour-long documentary about Australian cinema from the silent era all the way up till essentially 1997. And it's amazing. It's
really
one
is.
Of the best just history of film recaps.
If you want to learn about something you might not know that much about going in.
Yeah, really well done. And yeah, just like a random video release from Australia that I don't think anybody's seen. It's on YouTube if you want to check it out, listeners. Mm-hmm. Eva, what is your number one?
It's the Bluesmobile.
Mm.
The Bluesmobile, when we start the film, Jake has the reaction that many people do when they see the scarred equipment. And he says, yeah, what happened to the Cadillac? You know, and he's like, I had to trade it. He's like, you picked me up from prison in a cop car. He's driving an old cop car. So we've got an old cop car. It's already seen some things. The cigarette lighter's missing. And it accumulates more scars as the film goes on until the point that it just collapses at the very end. There's an alternate theory that the Bluesmobile is actually magic, that it has supernatural powers, and that's what, you know, why it's able to jump and roll and do the things that it does.
There's an element of magic in the rest of the movie too. At least Blues Brothers 2000. Like,
oh, there is in the first one when they're at the tent revival and he feels the calling. He is, you know, taken up into the air and there's light and he feels this. That's when he realizes what they're supposed to be doing for the rest of the movie. That they really, you could argue, he really does believe he's on a mission from God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I've seen the original.
You said you may not have seen it all the way through.
And I know I watched a lot of Blues Brothers 2000.
It was on VH1 a lot when we were kids.
It's got that Eric Bradley scene that's really good.
Yeah.
That's our list. Yeah. Listeners, what's your scarred equipment list? And if you have a random trope roll pick to send us, then you can send it to onthetropes@gmail.com. You can tweet us on Twitter @onthetropes. Comment on our Instagram page where you'll probably see a picture of
Velvet Malcolm X
with a beard, the good Malcolm, on the tropes on Instagram. TVtropes.org, mm-hmm. where you can listen to more episodes, find out about tropes.
Yeah.
You can find our archived episodes on tropes.podomatic.com.
You can watch Sven Gulli with us on Saturdays.
Yeah, we do Sven. Every Saturday night, listeners, we do a live tweet. Sven Gulli, which is like turned out to be like really fun. I mean, there's a lot of, for one, Sven Gulli is like,
yeah,
it's got a huge following.
Yeah, it's interesting because it seems to be that we have people who are kind of like friendly with us for the Sven Gulli part who are not really like, they don't really write into the show, they don't really comment anywhere. I guess we have no way of knowing if they ever listen to it if they don't tell us. And then we have, you know, our friends who write to us here that never really get over there.
Yeah.
And it's mysterious to me.
It really is.
We're running in a lot of circles right now.
Hmm.
A lot of different circles.
Yeah, we walk a higher path. Usually the keys open all the doors. I just watched Training Day.
We know. You guys don't know, because apparently that's our lost episode.
Yeah.
But,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, next week, I believe we will be talking about our top five favorite fights and just talking about kind of the state of
combat sports
in general.
Well, there's a cat asleep in my lap, so I can't really go anywhere.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't really get up.
Well, listeners, take very good care of yourselves and each other. Stay inside, stay safe, and we'll see you next week.